Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
First of all, was the reference to Spock, is that a crack on my ears? I just want to make sure. You think you're going to... What, are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question? What do you think? Look, I think John McCain has genuine passion about many of these international issues. I think that all of us share a belief that we want justice to prevail. But only I'm the President of the United States.
Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
From Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's what the United States of America has become, the Barry Obama Show. I don't know about you, but I tuned in the press conference today. It seems he has one every day with another initiative, this and that. And I turned it off when I saw the schmucks laughing at everything he said. I was embarrassed. I squirmed to watch the vermin from the major news outlets laughing as though it's a joke. I mean, we got North Korea. They didn't ask one question about North Korea. This is Obama's Cuban Missile Crisis moment. And none of the stooges from ABC, CBS, NBC, or CNN asked a question. What's interesting to me is that I saw Obama look down at a set of notes to see which reporter he was supposed to call on next. And then, like little sheeple, they had prepared questions that were typed out for them. I said, no, we don't have to wait too long for the ex-Soviet Union to reemerge. It's already reemerged. The only thing waiting are the re-education camps and the work camps. Otherwise, we're about 80% there. I don't know about you, but I was embarrassed watching the comedian-in-chief today. Do you think it's appropriate for the President of the United States to be making up jokes during an international crisis? Sure, John F. Kennedy made the occasional witty statement, but he certainly didn't do it in the middle of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the situation we have with North Korea now is Obama's Cuban Missile Crisis. Let's just hope it doesn't become his Bay of Pigs. There was even a point at which a reporter said, I would never make fun of your ears, sir. Are those the words of a citizen or a servile subject in a totalitarian dictatorship? I see it getting worse by the day. In fact, the laughter got me sick. Listen to the montage we did of the schmucks in the once distinguished Washington press corps laughing at everything the clown-in-chief said.
I'm not going to make news about Ben Bernanke.
Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
Is the public plan non-negotiable?
Well, that's your question. You think you're going to... Are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question?
Well, then I have a two-part question.
Go for it.
forth, Jay.
Is the public plan non-negotiable? I appreciate your Spock-like language about the logic of a health care plan, the public plan.
You're pitching, I'm catching.
Okay.
I got the question.
Did you hear that statement? You're pitching and I'm catching? I'm sorry. I know what subset of the human population that comes from. Don't you hear what's going on here? Play the rest of this.
Plan.
Okay.
So, you're
McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak.
What do you think?
Is the public plan non-negotiable?
Well, that's your question. You think you're going to... Are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question?
Well, then I have a two-part question. Is the public plan non-negotiable? I appreciate your Spock-like language about the logic of a health care plan, the public plan. Okay.
You're pitching, I'm catching.
Okay.
I got the question. First of all, was the reference to Spock, is that a crack on my ears? All right. I just want to make sure. No?
Never make fun of your ears, sir.
Do you find this to be a distinguished press corps? How does this press corps compare with the past? Well, I'm going to ask you stupid questions. I'm going to get stupid answers. I've never seen anything like this. The Barry Obama show with, I don't know whether they have actual shills in the audience. Actually, I don't think they need them. With the ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN crowd there, in addition to McClatchy News Services and AP, they don't need shills. You know, in China, they have professional mourners that go to funerals for people who had no friends. And they cry at the funerals of strangers to make believe they cared that the person died. I believe that the United States government has now reached a point where we have professional laughers who used to be called reporters or the press corps. I've never seen a more rapid devolvement in a nation as I am seeing under this questionable president of ours. But you know something, I can say this till I'm blue in the face. Those who suffer the Obama derangement syndrome, the ODSers, cannot heal themselves. The ODSers, I'm afraid there are no medications that can cure them. I think that no matter what this man does, those who suffer the ODS syndrome, the Obama derangement syndrome, will not see it. They see no evil, they hear no evil, and they speak no evil of this man. It is a combination of liberalism and reverse racism, where nothing that a man of color does who they admire can be seen as wrong. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. That's the way I see it. 1-800-449-8255. I also want to talk about something different because I'm sick of the news. And you know, the reason I'm sick of the news is because the people in the news business have become sickening. He gives a press conference, not one word about North Korea. He looks down and says, Mrs. Whatever, McClatchy News Services, and she reads something to him about the health crisis. The minute he gets into a tight spot from, who was the guy from Fox News who did the right thing? Major Garrett did the right thing. He was the only reporter who dared ask a real question, Major Garrett. The minute he got through with it, one of the shills, one of the professional laughers, asked the question that could give him a laugh line. That's why we put together the comedian-in-chief piece for you.
You've got mail.
Oh, I got mail again. What I wanted to talk about today, in addition to that, were hobbies. I know you say, what? I used to be a model maker as a kid. I admittedly don't have any hobbies right now, but I'm going to get them again. You know, men used to have hobbies in our culture. Now hobbies seem to have been obliterated by the internet, and men just download porn, or they go on YouTube, or MySpace. Your face, his face, all aboard, or they read the news. And I'm wondering what has happened to the American people, the whole Western world as a result of the internet. I believe that the computer and the internet have sucked people's creativity out of their beings. You take a look at the art, you take a look at the literature, you listen to the music, and I am telling you that it's all debased rapidly, all because of the computer. The computer has not enhanced our lives in the way that you may think. Sure, it's given us more information. Has it given us more knowledge? Or has the computer given us more information and less knowledge? Is that why such a shallow man as Obama, who was as deceitful as a president that could ever be, could get away with the kind of things he gets away with? I'm asking you a very important question. Play the Barry Obama opening again, just the opening part, till he talks. Go ahead. Play it. You could do that. You could hit the button again, right?
And now, direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
Right. And then you followed it up with department store dummies like Wolf Blitzer on CNN, who may as well work for Obama. Maybe he does already. We wouldn't know. There was an exchange today about the president's remarks about Iran. And there was a Republican and a Democrat. The Democrat being, of course, the regular faces you've seen for years. They never go away. They hang around like the plague. But there was a new face, a Republican by the name of Castellanos, who criticized Obama's lack of response to the Iran revolution that's going on. And he was immediately cut off by the department store dummy without male parts, Wolf Blitzer. I don't think we have the whole play 16.
I think there were two problems with today. One is he said basically the same thing he said before, which is he didn't want to upset the Iranian leaders. Well, when you say you don't want to upset the Ayatollah, you're putting him in charge of America's foreign policy. I don't think that's the position he wants to be in. And two, in the president's Cairo speech, he said he wouldn't do anything, say anything behind closed doors that he wouldn't say in public. Well, diplomacy is the art of the indirect. He's taking the bat out of America's hands, and so I think he's put himself in a weak position, which is still unresolved.
And then he goes on in 17.
Of course he does, but exercising those responsibilities and in such a weak way, look what the Iranians have done anyway. Killing rioters in the streets, suppressing democracy there. And instead of standing up from day one clearly for freedom, he's not. Our freedom wilts in those situations.
He did before the election when he saw the protests nightly. He did stand
up. He did condemn the violence. He said he was appalled and he used some pretty strong words. But let me move on to a different subject.
Sure, Wolfie, you did your job, you little rat, you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
I don't know whether we're still living in the United States of America. Many of you suspect that we are not. Drudge just posted what I've been talking about in his own words from Politico, where he says in 55 minutes, Obama didn't mention Iraq, Afghanistan, war, troops, soldiers, or war. Not once. After all, this college professor is commander-in-chief, and yet he said nothing about Afghanistan, Iraq, war, troops, soldiers, or war. Did he mention anything about North Korea? We don't know. We can't find it. He may have, I admit. But that's because the yuck-yuck session was pre-planned by Axelrod and the other controllers in the Stalinist White House, and so they called upon a woman from McClatchy who immediately went into health care. Jokes about ears, jokes about pitching and catching. It's unbelievable to me that you don't see this. Okay, that's why I'm talking about it. New York City, WOR, Eddie, your opinion counts. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael. I'm a Generation X person who listens to Obama, and every time I hear him, I cringe. He's setting up a real divide in this country between people that have responsibility in life and are suffering through what has really been the worst economic situation in my lifetime. And the people that don't have any responsibility in life will seem to jump on everything he says because all he promises them is getting taken care of. And it's
that's right. New York City is filled with deadbeats who sit around slugging beer in doorways, resenting those who have something and pay for that. And Obama is the president of those sitting in doorways drinking beer out of paper bags.
Well, I've lived in New York City my whole life, and you have never seen the city in such a morose, depressed, and unproductive frame of mind. And it's really a result of those people that are struggling to keep the street alive, to keep commerce going, And all we have is a president that talks about taking more of our money and handing it to other people in the form of entitlement.
Right. All the workers in America are depressed because they know that this man is a naked Marxist. They sense it. Look, if it walks like a Marxist, if it talks like a Marxist, it is a Marxist. Why is it so hard to understand that this far left, he was the most so-called liberal member of the U.S. Senate, which is saying an awful lot since it's a liberal Senate. Is that correct? So now take the most far-reaching element of that liberal Senate, Barack Obama, and now you look into the man's background. He sits in the church with Reverend Wright. He grew up with Bill Ayers and other radical leftists who called for the disassociation of the United States of America from its traditions and possibly the murder of 30 million Americans once the revolution occurs. And you expect this man not to be a Marxist?
Well, I'll tell you something else that people aren't talking about. I work in the legal industry. I'm a partner in a major international law firm. And Mr. Obama may have been a lecturer at Chicago Law School, but he did nothing with himself in the law to distinguish himself in any way. And his attitude reminds us exactly of the recent law graduates that come into work, have no idea how business operates, have no idea how to service a client, make extraordinary amounts.
Exactly. That's what I hear in his rhetoric. We hope that by extending the hand of peace to North Korea, they will recognize it will be in their best interests. And, you know, this positive Spockian reinforcement kind of garbage that children don't even respond to?
Well, there's a whole generation of young people in this country that go to the finest law schools, and you can't even put them in front of a client because they don't know the first thing about making a dime.
And well, here we have a president standing in front of the world, and he doesn't know the first thing about running a country.
Well,
but you have to admit he speaks well, doesn't he?
He's not that great.
Now you're talking. He's got a nice deep voice, the product of his father and grandfather, but I'm afraid his mind is quite shallow, and his knowledge is even more shallow. This man is a standing danger to the survival of this country. He's spending his every waking moment seeing how he can take a wrecking ball to everything that this man inherited. Now, the people say, well, he inherited from Bush. Yes, he inherited a $1 trillion deficit, and his answer is to make it into a $3 trillion deficit. That does not make sense to the average homeowner who balances a checkbook, which I doubt he does.
Savage.
I'm not going to make news about Ben Bernanke.
Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
Is the public plan non-negotiable?
Well, that's your question. You think you're going to... What, are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question?
All right, so as I said, they now have stooges who call themselves reporters who are fundamentally, basically professional laughers. And as I said to you, Chinese funerals usually have professional mourners who are paid to pretend they're crying at funerals. I've actually seen them outside the Green Street Mortuary in San Francisco. Really, they wail. Oh, I think the Jewish tradition still has that, believe it, in the Orthodox community. And that is because many people have no friends, or they were horrible human beings. And the family needs someone, you know, has some idea. So they hire professional criers. Obama has now apparently co-opted the entire press corps into becoming professional laughers and bootlickers. It's shocking that in 55 minutes he didn't mention war, soldiers, U.S. Marines, Navy, Air Force, troops, boots on the ground, Afghanistan, Iraq, or the word war. 55 minutes. It's amazing to me that during the so-called press conference, I didn't hear a word about North Korea. And I believe that this is his Cuban Missile Crisis. And I believe that the reason he is able to get away with his inactivity as a, or his rather lack of effectiveness as a commander-in-chief, let's put it to you that way, is because of the professional laughers. I don't understand how you people can even watch them anymore. Now, it is true that the audience lows for ABC, CBS, and the evening, ABC and CBS Evening News are all-time lows since they started keeping records. Nobody is watching these shills anymore. Katie Couric, toilet. Brian Williams, latrine. No one's watching them anymore, except people in hospitals, prisons, and on cruise ships where they can't get anything else. So that's why I brought up hobbies, you know, 1-800-449-8255. Here in America, the AFL-CIO went to Capitol Hill to lobby for more money to bail out more union workers, break up more companies, and they gave out hard hats as a memento of the working man in America, and the hard hats were made in China. That's all. Something's wrong here. It's all staged questions. Am I the only one who sees this? Am I the only one who says the king has no clothes? Who else is saying this? There must be others. There have to be others. How can anyone in the media not see this? Don't you people understand that we're all laughing at you? Brian Williams, Katie Couric, Charlie Gibson, attention, we're laughing at you. You are supposed to be the watchdogs for the American people. You have become less than lapdogs. So what do you want to talk about? Iran, North Korea, Obama's shady activities, how he's getting away with virtual. Let's just say he's getting away with an awful lot. Or hobbies. The reason I'm talking about hobbies is because I'm not making model ships, but I ordered them finished. It's a step better than watching the going on the internet every night for the news. I'm going blind from it. I used to build models. I ordered handcrafted wooden ship model, 44 inches in length, of a sailor, an ancient old boat. And I may start building models again in my old age. I don't know, when I get old. The guy in Florida quit radio. I saw this guy. I never heard of him. I don't know if he was any good, whatever. They threw him out, it looks like, to me, because he attacked, this Miami host attacked the owners. That's, you know, the old golden rule, never attack those who make the gold. You never heard that one? The golden rule is never attack those who make the gold. I heard that many years ago. Or you're going to wind up, like him, fired. But he there was something interesting. I never heard of the guy. He was a radio host, been on the air in Miami for like 13 years. They say he made $800,000 for a single market, which is not bad. It's about a third of what I made at my local station for a while, or somewhere around that. No one ever mentioned the amount, nor did I ever say the amount, nor did I confirm the amount, nor did I deny the amount. But he made a nice piece of change for his job. But they asked him, are you going to miss radio when you leave? And he said, yeah, I'll miss it like hemorrhoids. A lot of you say to me, oh, Mike, you know, if you leave radio eventually, you're going to miss it. You won't have any outlet for your venting. I think that line more or less says it. You miss it like hemorrhoids. See, what's going on is this. This was a good business when you thought you could make a change. But when you realize you wound up with a neo-Marxist neophyte as president with a group of stooges in the media laughing at everything he says and covering for him, it's a very difficult job now. It's not as much fun as it used to be because the American people are stupider. I'm not saying you are necessarily, but I'm saying generally the American media absorber, let's put it to you that way, you call it an audience, the American media absorber is less sophisticated, less knowledgeable than they were, and less active as a populace, you know? That's why I could just assume talk. I could do dog jokes. You know, I was joking yesterday about my friend's Irish wolfhounds that they died at 6 or 5. He owned an Irish bar, and they say, people say Irish wolfhounds die because of their inbreeding. And I said, no, it's because of the bar food. You should have given me the same thing you did with the Obama thing. I thought that was a funny joke. I made it up on the spot, right or wrong? Do you have that thing that you did for the opening with the kachek boom? You know, the drum thing? That one. Okay, let me say it again. Get it ready, and here's how it goes. Maybe I could just do comedy for an hour. I have to make it up on the spot, though. I had a friend who owned an Irish bar. He had a beautiful, gigantic Irish wolfhound. Dog died at 6 years old. Very sad. They say that Irish wolfhounds die at 5 or 6 because of the inbreeding and their size. No, I say it's because of the bar food. What if I just did that for 3 hours? That kind of stuff. Didn't I do another dog joke yesterday? Something? There was something about a dog joke. I don't know what it is. Let's do it my way. What would you like to talk about? New York City, WOR. Tony's calling about Korea. Go ahead, Tony.
Dr. Savage, an honor. North Korea, this two-bit dictator is threatening or promising to fire off a rocket towards or to Hawaii on July 4th. I know that we should put this guy in his place, but what do you think the U.S. government would do if, God forbid, he did that? I have a part of me wants to feel like...
Well, I think immediately Obama gives a press conference and says that they're no longer serving kimchi in the White House.
Right. I think they'd be like, yes, we're going to pass a resolution that was not good, the world community. I mean, we should... You know, my Italian grandmother, God rest her soul, if she was president, I mean, this guy even thought about pointing a missile, she would, like, break a spoon over his head.
That's right. We have a very, very deceptive man in the White House. He is hard-focused only on promoting the domestic neo-Marxist agenda that his controllers want him to pass. He is ignoring international politics completely, other than bowing down to foreign rulers wherever they can be found, so long as they're not white male Europeans.
Dr. Savage, can you also recommend a good Italian bottled red sauce for pasta?
I love the question, yes, but they're not advertising on the show, so no. I do. I used to use one, but I stopped. I used to use Prego, but they were taken over by Carnation, and I don't like the taste anyway. It's too acidic, and most of their sauces have sugar.
Can I tell you?
There's another brand out that's very expensive. It comes out of New York. Let's not mention brand names, and I use it exclusively at home.
Dr. Savage, when I was a kid, I would help my grandmother from Naples, Italy, get the tomatoes out of the garden. I would sit there in sweltering heat and turn those tomatoes with this big, I don't know what this device was, but it just cut and pressed the tomatoes into homemade sauce.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you something. When you gathered the tomatoes from your grandmother's yard, did they remove the seeds?
I'm gonna say they did not.
Before she crushed? Wait, she was crushing them to make sauce, correct?
Excuse me?
She was having you crush them to make sauce, right?
Correct, in a big, like, blade-crushing device. I don't know. I was too young.
I don't want to criticize, but according to what I have heard, the best way to use tomatoes for sauce is first remove the tomato seeds because they're bitter.
Possibly. I was very young. She put me to slave labor, but I was sitting there sweltering heat, crushing these tomatoes, and, what can I tell you?
Did you enjoy the sauce at the end of the day?
Yeah, it was the best. I mean, she was off the...
And every Sunday, did the family get together for dinner instead of today? Everyone's in their own place?
That's right. Everyone got together, and you had to finish your food. If you didn't finish your food, you were...
All right, I want to imagine this with you. At this family dinner, this New York Italian family dinner on Sundays, wasn't there always at least one uncle like me?
Yes. Well, that'd be my father, Ralph Cramden, a cross between Ralph Cramden Edith Bunker's husband there, Archie Bunker.
Thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. That's very funny. You're calling me Archie Bunker or Ralph Cramden. I don't know whether to turn you off right now or say thank you.
Sat at the table kind of like you. He knew everything about everything and, a Vietnam vet and,
Did he live or did he pass on?
He's
is he alive?
Here. He's still here busting chops.
How old is he?
He's, 62, just got over...
Oh, he's a young guy, for God's sakes. He hasn't even gotten a second win yet.
Savage.
Is he in... Wait a minute, hold on. Is he in good shape, Tony?
Relative good shape. Yeah, he's alive. He's enough to, like I said, to bust chops.
Well, what, does he smoke and drink?
No, he doesn't drink. He used to be a smoker, drinker, but gave it up when we were born, and, he was...
So why is he only in reasonably good shape if he doesn't drink?
He likes his pasta, Doc. He likes his pasta.
Oh, so he put on a little weight.
As we say in Italian, he doesn't like to camminare. He doesn't like to walk.
It's a lack of exercise. All right, that's his business. All right, I get it. What are you going to do? Everyone tells me to stop with the pasta eating, too. I can't help it. If I don't have a plate of spaghetti, I don't feel good. In fact, tonight, I was going to do that tonight. I was going to make this chicken, Andalusian sausage with spaghetti, with that bottled sauce. One fresh loaf of bread, and that's it. And go to my normal hobby, which is making ship models with toothpicks. I'm joking. Oh, yes, I've been working on a model of the USS Independence out of toothpicks for the last 93 years. And I'm going to put it in one giant creamery bottle when it's finished. I guess I'm laughing because if Obama can get away with bad jokes, so can I. Hey, let's keep doing that for a while. Let's follow Obama's lead. Anything I say that's semi-humorous, even if it's terrible, just play the drum thing. So let me see. Let me come up with another dog joke. Every day I have the same pattern. Every day, no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, it's the same thing. I always have my dog Teddy with me. Now, normally before a show, I eat a big lunch and say to myself, God, what did I eat such a big lunch for? And I go into a dark room in the radio station, close the door, and lay down on a couch. Today, when I got in that room before the show and laid down on the couch, I sighed and said, oh, God, and my dog looked up at me and barked. That didn't work because there should have been a better punchline. I'll be right back. Savage.
Now, direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
It's not on this show. It's not the Barry Obama Show. That would be ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and CNN. This is not the Barry Obama Show. No siree, Bob. 1-800, you have any bad jokes? We can just do that for the rest of the week on the Savage Nation. We may as well. Obama gets away with it. Play clip two. Just play clip two for a minute.
I'm not going to make news about Ben Bernanke.
Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
And you get the picture. It's amazing. I really think that they have professional laughers in the room, along with the jerks. But you look at their faces, they look like idiots. I'd rather talk about Italian tomato sauce than about Obama. I'd rather talk about tomato sauce than Obama. I'm serious, honest to God. Anything you want to talk about, tomato sauce would be more interesting to me than this charlatan. I'd rather talk about authentic Italian tomato sauce than an inauthentic president. How's that? Does that work for you? New York City, W.O.R. Carlo, welcome to the program.
Dr.
Carlo.
I've been on your show.
Yes.
I've been a big fan for 6 years, and I wanted to verify your comment. I make Italian tomato sauce with my parents every year. Every summer we do it. My parents are from Italy. And we do remove the seeds, and it does reduce the acidity in the tomato sauce.
Right, and then you don't have to use sugar. If you take out the sugar is used because people generally don't bother removing the seeds, and the seeds are bitter. But there's no need to add sucrose to tomato sauce generally. How do you remove the seeds, though? You core the tomato?
There's a strainer. It's either a hand-crank machine that actually strains the tomato. It presses the tomato and strains it. And then you pack it into mason jars and boil it for several hours to seal it. And you put one basil leaf in, and it actually has a natural sweet taste to it. There's nothing else added. Just a
interesting, yeah, because the fructose is found in the tomato itself. All fruit has fructose, commonly known as fruit sugar. And if you cook it properly, the fruit sugar should sweeten the dish sufficiently. That is correct. I just pulled fresh garlic out of my garden that I've been growing all winter. I pulled out all the shoots. I bet most people who eat garlic never saw the actual garlic attached to the shoot it comes from, Allium sativum. I'm going to have that tonight on bread. That's all. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. Again, I went to the doctor last week. Again, they gave me an anti-cholesterol drug. This time I said, all right, I'll try it. They said, try Crestor. And I said, okay, but I told you last time I had reactions to Lipitor. He said, all right, tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. He said, I'm going to ask you to take a half of the smallest dose only twice a week for 2 weeks and see if there are any side effects. All right. Thursday night, took the half of a 10-milligram tablet. Friday morning, I had a backache. I've had slight palpitations. I don't have any of these problems, and I'm not complaining. I think that by what I'm doing, it's as far as I could possibly go with regard to cardiovascular fitness and health. I believe that there's an obsessional point beyond which if you push yourself, you actually make yourself sicker. Oh, I remember what I wanted to talk about today. I saw possibly the worst television series in modern American history on Showtime last night. Edie Falco, who plays Mrs. Soprano, Carmela Soprano in The Sopranos, is in a new show called Nurse Betty. And she plays like a short-haired nurse in a major hospital. She's married and has two children, but she's screwing one of the doctors or a pharmacist in the hospital to get drugs. And she's supposed to be a mixture between a devil and an angel. and they're showing that every woman is basically a Jezebel behind the scenes, even though they may have a good heart. You can't really condemn them if they're out screwing around. I've never saw anything as degenerate as this show, Nurse Jackie. But more than the degenerate, doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm used to that on Showtime. It's bad. Bad writing, bad acting, bad directing. Example. There's a couple in the hospital, supposedly a Jewish couple, and I think the guy who plays the dying man is Eli Wallach. And his wife is supposed to be a Jewish wife of 50 years, feeding him chicken soup on his deathbed. I thought I was watching something out of Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Goldberg from the 1950s. I thought any minute she'd get up and go, "Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Goldberg." I don't know who's writing this. And everything was cutesy about the two Jewish people in the deathbed scene, and cutesy about chicken soup being better than medicine. I said, I was cringing. I watched it out of horror. And then every other scene was about either drugs or sex. And, of course, you know, the guys in the hospital are all her buddies. One is a glade of a doctor. The other is a gay guy who's Latino, who's a kind of nurse friend of hers. I don't know who's writing this. How could this be? How could Edie Falco, who is a fine actress, not see how shallow she appears and how poorly controlled the show is? Anyone want to comment on that show, Nurse Jackie? How bad it is? Or why you like it? I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I am a media critic because I watch as much of it as anyone in the country, I think, who's not in the media. I mean, I don't do it for a living, but I just like the medium, all of them. I like the medium of television, rather, in particular. And I'm always looking for a good series. I have never seen anything worse than Nurse Jackie. So we can talk about Obama's laugh-a-thon. We can talk about the Barry Obama show. We can talk about the fools in the media who are nothing but professional laughers. We can talk about the fact in 55 minutes he didn't say the word Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, war, Marines, Navy, or Air Force, and he's the commander-in-chief in a time of war. He did not say much or anything about North Korea because the professional stooges in the audience were not permitted to ask any questions. Axelrod probably warned them that if you ask a question about North Korea, you're out of here.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizzlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
First of all, was the reference to Spock, is that a crack on my ears?
We've been talking today so far about the absurdity and the embarrassment of the once proud Washington Press Corps, which relentlessly attacked and pursued George Bush, which are now just nothing but little puppies urinating on themselves and laughing at everything the great one does. And that is why we are instead talking about why big dogs die young and how to make a proper tomato sauce in the Savage Nation, which I'm going to continue for a minute. I used to make my own marinara sauce, by the way. I don't anymore because I don't have the patience. I buy it in a jar, and I'm not going to give you the brand because they don't advertise. So there's nothing to it, actually. You take the two, you get 28-ounce cans of plum tomatoes. They call San Marzano. Now, it's interesting about those. They say you have to use San Marzano tomatoes. But in California, which I think has superior tomatoes to the Italian variety, and secondly, they're not shipped from such a long distance, you can get just as good a product. They call them San Marzano because they come from the San Marzano stock. They're the preferable variety. You can use others. So as I say, if you really want to go to the next step, you clean the tomatoes of skin and you remove the core because that has the seeds and the seeds are a little bitter. And what else do you need? Not much. You need some garlic. You need some basil. You need not many people like oregano. I grow my own because it's much sweeter than the dried variety. And olive oil. I use Spanish olive oil in everything. You say, why? Well, I once lived in Spain and I developed a taste for it. People say they all have preferences for various olive oils. My preference is Spanish olive oil. The trees are some 500 years old, some of them older than 500 years old, and it is a lower acid oil in general for some reason. So to make a long story short, you put the oil, the olive oil, in a saucepan, and not one of those non-skid ones, please. Medium-low heat, not high heat, not low heat, right? You put oil in a large pan. You saute the oil, and then you add the onion. I like a lot of onion. They say a whole onion minced up really fine. And it's not that much to it. You stir the garlic and the onion for about 30 seconds, just till it becomes translucent. Okay, then you stir in the tomatoes. I don't put any salt in it because you don't need to. And then you could raise the heat a little bit. Some say bring to a boil and reduce the heat to a low simmer. I don't even boil it. I just keep it cooking on a low simmer for about an hour. And that's the end of the story. How hard is it? Tomato sauce is tomatoes. That's all. What do you think it really is? People will adjust it to taste. Salt or the pepper or more onion or less onion or more garlic or more basil, less basil. But basically, that's a marinara sauce. That's the whole story. Some will use more oregano. Some will use more pepper. And I got mayo. I don't have a sauce, though. I got mayo. The most important thing to remember here is when you add garlic to hot oil, it will burn very often, and it's going to turn bitter very fast. That's the single biggest mistake that novice cooks make. And if it does happen, you got to throw the oil out and start all over again. The minute that garlic burns or turns hard, you've lost the recipe. Throw it all in the garbage. I'm telling you right now, I used to do that as a youngster. You know, kids don't know anything. Oh, let's cook garlic. You know what's really hard to make? I'll tell you the truth. If you try to make it at home, oil, the sauce that's plain oil and oleo and garlic, whatever they call it. That's not easy to make it right. I tried it last week. I had to throw it all in the garbage, not because I burnt it, but because I didn't like the flavor of it. I think I put too much salt in it. You say, well, what are you talking about this instead of talking about Obama and how he's ruining America? Because that's a given already. That's all. What do you want me to talk about? How about a nice recipe for penne with eggplants, with tomato and eggplant? I love eggplant. Oh, I love it. Anyway, let's go back to the callers on why big dogs die early and how America's dying fast. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. On which topic do you call?
Oh, the dogs dying early, Michael. I got the definitive answer from you. I got it from that doctor of the study of human behavior, Henny Youngman, years ago. It's the same reason that most husbands die before they their wives. It's because they want to.
But wait a minute. I understand the husband joke, but how does a dog want to die young?
Well, the big dogs got this persona, you know. They got to go around putting up a big bluff all their lives, and they're just tired of it.
Okay, give him the rim shot. Come on, he earns the rim shot. Come on, give it to him. Say that again. Give me the punchline again. Say it again, and we'll do it properly. Why do big dogs die young?
They die young because they want to.
Come on. All right, not bad. Closer. We only had a little time lapse there that was equivalent. All right, let me send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because I really appreciate a good sense of humor. I don't think that's the reason big dogs die young. Big dogs die early because they're inbred. Does anyone know why Irish wolfhounds die early? I joked and said it's because of the bar food. I mean, if you live in sawdust and you're eating French fries and, you know, greasy fish on a regular basis, you're going to die young. I'm Amarillo, Texas. David, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I just wanted to thank you for, you know, several years back you were talking about Snowy and how, you know, you thought he was kind of on his last leg, and you took him out to the farm and actually lived a couple more years longer than you thought. And
yep.
At that time, I had a Great Dane that had passed away, and she was 6 years when she passed. And, you know, just like with Teddy, they're like kids.
Oh, don't get me. I don't know what to do with this one. I'm more bonded with this dog than any other dog I ever had. I'm terrified of him getting older. He's only five, and people, whenever they ask me how old he is, I'm afraid to answer it because it makes me count the years, and I don't want to start thinking about mortality with him.
I hate to say it, but, you know, I cried harder with the Great Dane dying than with my dad passing. I know it sounds bad, but they're like your kids. I mean, they're so much a part of you. You're so close to them every
that
day.
That is right, and they read you like no other being in your life. As I said to you, I eat lunch. He gets up and walks toward the nearest couch or bed. He knows I want to lay down after lunch. I never saw anything like it.
It is. It's spooky. I mean, they know what you're going to do before you're going to do it. They can read you like a book. And I just wanted to
now think. Why? Now, let me say, so you owned a big dog. A Great Dane is on the equivalent size of a Irish Wolfhound. Why? What have you been told? Why do big dogs die young?
You know, I asked someone that, and I never could get a straight answer. You look at an elephant, the biggest land mammal in the world. Those things live to be, you know, 70s, 80s, and above.
So, there's common sense. That's right. It's a big animal, and it doesn't die young. Is it because the Irish Wolfhound is inbred, for example, and the Great Dane is an inbred animal where size was selected, and the size itself is not sustainable? Built upon the genetics of the original stock? I'm groping.
You with your science background, you can get a lot closer to hitting it on
the
head.
Maybe we'll get an expert. I appreciate it. No, the dog thing is amazing. Yes, Snowy was given up for dead, but I overfed her. I ate, she ate. I mean, I don't know what to do. The dog's 12, 15 pounds. I treat it like a person. The dogs don't know any difference, and I just fed it. So she got 20 pounds overweight. Who knows? They said, gas it. I said, I'll gas you first. They said, give it the needle. I said, I'll give you euthanasia first. Are you crazy? So we found a farmette for her, and she came back to life because I was no longer feeding her. They put her on a restricted, you know, normal dog diet, not the diet I was raised on. Oh, my God, poor mama. She meant well. Cherry vanilla ice cream after a steak and French fry dinner at age 11? God, I was narcoleptic. You know, you go to school on that kind of diet, you're narcoleptic. By the time 9:30 rolls around, you're ready for your semi-comatose. You know, it is summertime, guys. Give me a break. Can I just tell stories from my childhood? Can I please let go of the politics for a while? Can I start telling stories from my childhood? That's all I want to talk. And new ones are coming to my mind. And I'm not making them up. Not new stories. New memories that are worth sharing to a certain extent and not worth sharing in another way. But they do flow back. You ask yourself, how does the human mind work? You start to wonder, how does the human mind work? And why do certain boyhood memories come back at a certain point in your life? Why? Why all of a sudden are they coming back? What would make them not flood over your mind, but sort of flow into your mind? Why? And what, deeply repressed? I don't mean anything traumatic necessarily. I don't see them as traumatic incidents in my life. But I mean, I'm looking back at some kids I knew when we were young. Oh, I remember the one I was talking about. I ride a bicycle most every day. So when I'm on a bike, I usually clear my mind a lot. And I was coming back and I thought of a friend I had when we were really kids. Boys. How old? 10 to about 15. More in the 10, 11 year age bracket. And he was a gutsy kid. He had a lot of guts. He was much taller than the rest of us. And he was a rangy kid. And he really had guts. And I remember what he did. A competing group of kids from another block. In those days, no one shot, no one stabbed. But the other kids would try to run you down with their bicycle. If you were walking, they'd come speeding at you with their bicycle to drive you off the sidewalk, for example. Now, most of us would jump off the sidewalk. This guy would stand there like a toreador. And I remember to this day, came back to me today. And he'd reach up with his hands, and he'd grab the handlebars and twist them, and the kid would go flying off the bicycle. Then he'd have him on the ground. I said, oh, my God, what guts. It was like a guy who was not cavalry facing a soldier on a horseback and not flinching. I said, even in Queens, there were such situations in a smaller way. You know what? I don't know. Does it matter? It just came to me. Why? I don't know why. I was just trying to think about it. Just float up on the bicycle. There's a part of all of us that never forgets certain things. That's all. Forget about it. It's not that important. See, we're no longer talking about Obama and the laughter, are we? We're talking about why big dogs die young and tomato sauce and adventures. But that's not a good enough reason to do a radio show, is it? Do you really tune in to hear me tell stories? Or do you tune in to hear me tell you what's really going on in Washington and the world? Or do you want a mixture of both? And if you could be the director of the Savage Nation, would you make it 80% storytelling and 20% politics? Or would you go 80% politics and 20% storytelling? I'll be right back. Savage. Get any calls about that nurse show? How come no one watches it? Probably on Showtime. I don't know, but Edie Falco should know better than that. What a piece of garbage! I think it could destroy her career. It could be that I've never seen her in anything that she's done very well outside of playing second lead to a guy like Tony, whatever is it? What's the real actor's name? I forget right now. Gandolfini. I understand Gandolfini's shooting a movie where he's playing Hemingway. He should be good. I think he could play a good Hemingway, frankly. But I don't know if they would have hired the right people to advise them like Hotchner. You know, I hope they don't give me an ersatz Hemingway. Oh, God. That's all I need now. To put him in a dress yet and say he was a transvestite. San Francisco, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, Michael. Pleasure to talk to you. I got a couple of good ones. Tomato sauce. Want to hear a funny one?
I'm listening.
I ran out of sauce one night, and I had some V8, a big old jar of V8. I put the whole thing in, let it simmer down for about an hour. Ended up being one of the best sauces I ever had.
Oh, please give him a rim shot on that one. Come on, what a joke that is.
No, I'm not kidding.
The day I eat spaghetti with V8 sauce that's cooked down is the day I don't want to live any longer.
It was really good.
Yeah, okay, Dan. That's like people who put ketchup on spaghetti and call it a sauce. Thank you. 1-800-449-8255. No, we could do food. We could do food. Why not? Everyone. Do you know anyone who listens to this? Do you know anyone who doesn't eat? You know, it's like everyone eats, so therefore they think they're an expert on food. That's true, myself included. So everyone who reads, let's say, emails, think that they can write a book. They then become a literary critic. Anyone who listens to talk radio believes that because they listen, they could do this show with their hands behind their back. You understand how this works? New York City, WOR, Chester A., welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm currently calling you over my stove where I'm making pasta sauce. what I'd like to talk to you about is at a certain point in history, recent history, you got to the point where anyone could – thought they could be a chef or an artist. And with bad food comes bad art, and with bad art comes bad food. And this is something you can apply to just about anything.
Well, it's true. So I understand all of that. So you're cooking yourself, though. Is that because you are different than the average man?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm an artist, and we're different than everyone. And
that's correct. You're better than everyone as well. But Chester, how do you make tomato sauce since you're an artist and you're better than everyone?
Well, I get some tomatoes. I get some palmy tomato sauce, oil, garlic. Put the tomato sauce in. Put some sausages in. Put some homemade.
Wait! You said you get tomatoes and tomato sauce, so you do a little of both.
Yep.
In other words, you do the tomatoes, then you add in a faker, like a topper in a bottle.
No, it's just tomatoes, pureed tomatoes that's ready.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Okay, so like you get the plum tomatoes in a can?
Yeah.
Or a sauce. You get a bottled sauce to go with it?
Yeah.
What kind of sausage do you use?
Just like a sweet sausage.
Yeah, and now that's a very plain but excellent meal. What do you yourself serve yourself with it? Since artists eat alone, because they can't stand anybody because they're better than everybody. After you make the sausage and sauce, which is usually for four people, you eat it alone. What do you use with? You get a bread?
Yeah, just a nice crusty, fresh Italian bread.
Right. That's the most important thing is to get the crusty bread that you dip in the sauce and you suck that hot sauce till you can almost burn yourself, just below the burning level. That's exactly. The best part of it. Now, you drink wine with it or not?
If I have some good wine.
And do you listen? To the radio, or what do you generally do while you eat?
No, usually I turn everything off and just eat it with my family.
That's a smart man. Turn the show off and enjoy dinner. I'll be right back while you're eating.
Savage.
This is dedicated to Jackie Smith. Doug, I don't know how you do it. Doug does that for me. For those of you who are interested in the United Kingdom struggle, since no one else in the media is, I am working every day, back channels, diplomatic channels. We're basically on hold with the lawsuit. But I'm getting legal correspondence every day. The bills are running up. But we're waiting. We're seeing if we can do this diplomatically, getting my name off the list. Otherwise, we're going to have to go to the legal level. And then we'll see. So it's not like it's not dormant, okay? Things are happening. Let's go back to a topic that we raised earlier. It could be politics. It could be politics. It could be stories. It could be... Actually, in this segment, no matter what we talk about, I'm going to read one story from my psychological nudity book called Fat Al's Tuna, because many of you love it, and it's somewhat food-related, and it's one of the favorites that everyone loves. Missouri Ben, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just want to let you know it is a pleasure to speak to you. Secondly, in regard to the large dogs dying young topic that you were talking about earlier.
Yes, I'm interested. Why is that?
Well, in my experience, I've bred German Shepherds in the past, and through research, it's been shown that the white German Shepherd. Have you ever heard of those?
Yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, they're actually genetically engineered. They were bred to be larger, smarter, stronger, faster than a regular run of the mill German Shepherd, and their life expectancy for some reason. Obviously, through either inbreeding or genetic engineering or something along that line, have made their life expectancy 2 to 3 years, shorter than a regular German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not even registered by the or they're not recognized rather by the American Kennel Club.
That's amazing. They're very rare. Now, were they bred for this in terms of working in the Alpine regions? Is that one of the reasons they were bred to be white?
I think the only reason why they were bred like that is because I think it was just mainly for just a different color characteristic. I don't really think there was any ulterior motive.
Well, look, I don't know dog breeding, but I do know that all dogs are descendants of, we all know, from the wolf. But you know that all the varieties of dogs that we know today were developed through breeding over the last 200 years. That's a given.
Right, right. And if you were to actually go back and look in the history books of the actual German-bred German Shepherd, there are two different types of German Shepherds. There's the American-bred and the German-bred Shepherds. The German-bred Shepherds have a much more rounded-off hind quarter, backside.
But not to get too trapped into the Shepherds per se. My question is why big dogs die young, and just being a casual student of biology, I believe it's because their hearts are not large enough for the rest of the animal's body. They were bred too quickly. They were selected. The large size was selected too rapidly for the, let us say, innards to keep up with the development. It's something along those lines, and I'm groping here. I don't know the exact answer, but I think it's that their hearts are too small for the size of their bodies.
I think you could be right. I do know that if you look at early pictures of any of the large breed dogs, they look a lot different than what we're used to today.
Yeah, but I was amazed to learn that all of the varieties of dogs that we have today were developed through inbreeding over the last 200 years. I thought it was amazing because you could actually change a breed in a few generations of breeding. I don't mean generations of people. Remember, how long does it take for a dog to for gestation? How many months is it?
It's actually not quite 3 months.
All right. So think about that. In a very short number of years, you can select the animal you want and alter your breed. Thank you. That's what we mean by selective breeding. And I can go from that to humans, if you'd like, how we're actually selecting in the reverse in the human species for a survival. We're actually permitting those who have the least survival skills to have the most children. You look at it, just take a look at it, and you'll see that I'm right. I know you're not supposed to mention that. And then take a look at the other end of the scale. Some of the brightest, most creative and intelligent people in society don't get married at all or don't have children at all. That's a form of genetic suicide. If you'd like to talk about that, I think we've done all we can say. 1-800-449-8255. Look, it's the summertime. I got to back off the Barry. Play the Barry thing for 1 second so they know what I'm talking about here. Just, you know, so they know where I'm coming from.
And now, direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
That's pretty good. I wrote that this morning, and they put it together for me. What, guys, I have a TRN. I said, get music from, like, Jack Parr. Write these words. Who did that, Beowulf? Whose voice is that? Oh, he's good. Mike, very good voice. You should consider a career in radio. You know, there aren't that many people who go into radio at all anymore, by the way. It's probably the most dying area of the media. People don't understand radio is going to be around forever. You know, it's like it's written off. It shouldn't be written off. A radio is immediate. It's accessible. It's free. And you can get it anywhere. You don't have to go and start to think. I believe radio is going to be around forever. And I think talk radio is more important today than ever before. Not only because we're almost the last of the Mohegans who are not part of the Barry Obama Show, but for the personal feeling that people get listening to radio. Remember, I am old enough to have grown up. I got to say this again. I'm the oldest guy in talk radio. I'm not looking for any award for that. I never knew I would have, you know, that would happen. But I am, at this point, the oldest person in talk radio right now. I grew up listening to radio. I told you that. I can't say that many people who were in talk radio grew up listening to radio. I listened to the radio before there was television. My father would smoke the, Philip Morris, and he'd listen to the Green Hornet or whatever, and I would fall asleep in his lap while he read the paper. Now, think about the input. Think about the olfactory, the cigarette. Think about the sounds of the rustling of the paper. Think about the sounds of the voices on radio. Think about the sound... You should die again, you bum. Because that guy, I'm nothing against him personally, but that ad killed more men than you could imagine, you know, what it did to people. Why did the midget, I still don't understand it. Why would a little guy be a reason for a guy to smoke a cigarette? I don't understand the association. I could see the rugged Marlboro man, which later became something else. But, you know, a guy, okay, I smoke a cigarette, it's associational with a rugged guy. Or a beautiful woman, whatever. But why admit? Why would a little guy call for Philip Morris? Why would the poor man, the average poor man, call for Philip Morris? You mean when he went in the store, it was like it was in his head. That's all, because the little guy, that was Johnny something or other, right? We had his name. We did a show on him once. Lived in Sheepshead Bay, kept a yacht there, and liked tall women and boats. That's all. Not a bad guy. He had it about right. What does size have to do with anything anyway? He knew what he liked, and he had the money to have it. That's all. He went out in his boat, and boom, fartick. Put on the boom. You see, you didn't hit the boomer. Now, you didn't hit it. And that's too late already. Now already it's not funny. No more. No more. No more of that. No more of that stuff. It's dead. It's old. We got to come up with a new one. San Diego John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I want to talk about Nurse Jackie.
Yes, the worst show on television.
Completely agreed. Awful acting, as you mentioned. I don't think you mentioned that all of this is going on in a Catholic hospital.
Oh, and at the end, when the Jewish couple is dying, who's the bad person? It's the hospital administrator who's prominently wearing a cross. They attack Christians in it as well. I saw that as at the topper. Who wrote this garbage?
I have no idea. No idea. I watched this with my girlfriend, who is actually a nurse. She's been a nurse for about a year. And I said basically the same thing that you've been saying, and she didn't get it.
No, what, how bad the show is? That it, you know, everything about it is an insult to nurses and to normal people?
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, the worst part last night was I was just scanning. Honest to God, I never watched the show before. I saw a minute or two, and it was not compelling. But the couple that was dying, did you see that one, the old Jewish couple? He was dying, and the wife was there with the chicken soup. This was a stereotype of stereotypes. Do you know any Jewish couples who still eat chicken soup in the world? I mean, really, this was a 1950s image of Jews. The dying man and the woman dutifully standing next to him, feeding him chicken soup. And telling a doctor, hey, we don't need medicine. We got the best medicine from God. It's a chicken soup recipe. And made me cringe. Who wrote this dreck?
It was horrible. All in a Catholic church. And to try to make up for it, the last scene, she asked for God's help, which added insult to injury.
Oh, it was awful. But why would Edie Falco, who's a competent actress, let's say when she's playing a secondary role, I've never seen her I did see her in one movie where she played some kind of, I don't remember, it was set in Florida, like in the Everglades or in the Keys, where she played some kind of barfly in trouble. She was good. But by and large, she cannot play the dominant role in a movie and carry it herself. Nevertheless, she's a fabulous actor. Why would she not see how bad she is in this?
I don't know how anyone could read that script or any of those scripts.
And not see what it is. Everyone's a stereotype. The gay nurse is a stereotype. The Jews are a stereotype. She's a stereotype. And her having sex with the pharmacist every day at noon, even though she's married, for drugs. Isn't that tiresome after a while?
Pathetic.
It's pathetic. Thank you. I figured my taste hasn't been shot. And on that note, we now go to some mood music, guys. Play the mood music that we picked. Come on. That's it. That's it. We're going to take you back to a time and place that no longer exists. It was an innocent time. But we didn't know it. It's not that the guys weren't what they are today. It's just that it was a more innocent time in America. I was 17 and working as a busboy at Shanks Paramount Hotel up in the Catskill Mountains in New York. This comes from page 59 of Psychological Nudity, Fat Al's Tuna. And I worked there every summer to pay for college. The hours were horrendous. They were gruesome. You see, we'd work from 5 in the morning until midnight. You had to get up at 5 to prep the breakfast. Then you worked the early bird. Then you worked the breakfast. And you weren't out of the dining room until 10 in the morning. You were filthy. You were sweaty. You were dirty. Then you had to be back at 11:30 for the crowd to pour in for lunch. And you had to smile at them, no less. Some of them would rip a bill in half and say to you, hey, kid, get over here. My name is George Shapiro. Let me tell you something. See this $20 bill? Me and my family are going to be up here for 2 weeks. Take half this bill. I promise they really did it. And he'd say, you give us good service and I'll give you the other half. We had guys who actually did that. Anyway, then you'd work the lunch rush. You'd clean up only to get ready to serve dinner. You wouldn't get out of there until 9, and you'd be back at midnight for the snack. That's the way it worked. It was something out of Dickens. You know, kitchens and how they worked fascinated me, how they could serve so many different meals so quickly to so many people. I love to see the guys carrying the trays and the guys screaming at them from the back, watch out, moron! It was awesome. The running, the hustling, the bustling, and all the yelling in the kitchen. I remember in the kitchen there was a guy we called Fat Al. He was the breakfast and lunch cook, a fat Italian guy, maybe 400 pounds of blubber. Underneath the blubber was solid iron. He had a neck on him like a tree stump. He'd wear a bandana around his neck and on top of his head, and he'd sit with a cigarette hanging out of the side of his mouth as he cooked. I don't know how old he was. He could have been 38. To me, he looked 90. I was only 17. One day, old Fat Al called me over and he said, hey, kid, come over here. I'll show you how to make the tuna. As I watched, his cigarette dangled from his mouth over the bowl. I'll never forget how Fat Al didn't use a Cuisinart to mix things up. You know, with the stainless steel blades that all the fancy chefs need to use today on the cooking shows. No, Fat Al mixed stuff in the big tureen with his big mitt. He'd be up to his armpit in the tureen, mixing the tuna and seasonings, his arm going around and around in the bowl. At one point, he says to me, all right, kid, throw in the mayo. So I'm throwing in one jar after another of monster kitchen-sized mayo jars, and he keeps mixing it with his hairy arm in the bowl. I'm saying to myself, some of the hair's got to be in the tuna, too. Of course, his cigarette ashes were falling from his mouth as well. That's when I decided to take my chances and say something. I said, excuse me, Al, what about the ashes getting in there? He said, never mind, it gives it flavor. Well, that exchange in the back of my mind, I figured that if I had said anything to my supervisor, like why in the world is the government handing out checks to people who refuse to work faster than Santa on Christmas, she'd say to me, You know what I'm saying? That's from another story. I moved already on to another story. Play, that's from Fat Al's Tuna. I wouldn't give today to be back in that hotel this summer, just for one day. Is the Savage Nation. You know, I complain. I say people don't have hobbies anymore. It's not creative. We're all on the computer. It's true. We all are, including myself. I mean, I don't have any hobbies anymore. I go boating. I go bicycling. But many of the hobbies I used to have are gone. I don't know how anyone is an artist anymore. Like, I'll give you an example. During the break just now, one of my relatives is on a flight right now, one of my immediate family members. So I went on a site called Flight Tracker. I mean, how could you not love sites like this? Where they show you where the flight, you enter the city it left, where it's going, blah, blah, blah. And they show you where the plane is apropos of right to second. How could you not love this? This is the beautiful part of the world that we have. And it's so seductive that you wind up doing this instead of, like, say, a stamp collection or a coin collection. It's very difficult to maintain hobbies. I'm trying to force myself to even going back to the collecting that I used to do. I used to collect certain, you know, types of nautical paintings. You know, I'm not talking about rare art, but good art. Or ship models. I would buy antique ship models if they were good, not great. And I said, you know what? Why not buy them? Buy them again. So I went on a site that makes them. My first one's coming tomorrow. It'll be broken probably in the box. That's another thing, you know. But I'm saying, you look, I got mail again. There's a flight tracker. I'm looking right now. It's over a body of water. I'm already distracted. The little red plane with the – it's off the land now over a body of water, and I could be nervous for the next 3 hours. This is the problem. Nothing is left to the imagination anymore. Houston, Texas. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, your show to me is like sitting at the grown-up table at a big family gathering with all the favorite aunts and uncles. And we do have wide-ranging conversations. It goes from current events to history to the dogs to food. And that is, to me, that multidimensional aspect is what I love about the Savage Nation.
Well, I appreciate that, I'll be honest with you, because that's how I can do a show. I really cannot sit for 3 hours and talk only about the laughing press corps and Obama. I think you heard the opening, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And you know what I mean. My point was well made right off the bat with the production elements and the whole thing of the laughter. I mean, you don't have to say it over and over again and beat it to death, you know. John, you know what the most important thing to me is actually hearing from callers from around the country? Because I've said this over the years. Here I am, a guy originally from New York with a heavy New York accent. I've lived on the West Coast most of my adult life. I've had a variety of experiences, professions, jobs. And yet when I contact people from the nation, wherever they may be, including yourself from Houston, our accents may be different, but we're communicating with each other, which to me makes me feel complete. I don't even know how to describe it any better than that. Reaching people is a phenomenon that I really enjoy. Sacramento, Janet, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I have always enjoyed hearing your childhood stories from the East Coast. I spent 50 years, my entire life here on the West Coast, and it always surprises me how different, even though we're here in the same country, how different our lives have
Interesting.
Been.
Well, have you yet gotten a copy of Psychological Nudity? Have you had a chance to see one yet? If not, I'm going to send you one.
Oh, thank you. Also,
no, you got it. Because you'll read the book, you're going to fall in love with all the stories. It was written for families and children. Unlike David Letterman, there are no rape jokes, et cetera, in this book. I don't need to resort to four-letter words to get people to read a book, unlike David Letterman. Oh, stay on the line. You're going to keep running. Don't lose her now. I wanted to get the... Yeah, good. I'm on the flight tracker. I'm completely distracted already. Now, I'm looking at the plane back and forth. The Gulf of Mexico, this way, coming east, going west. Waco, there's Austin, there's Corpus Christi, there's Laredo. Oh, what's going on the border with Mexico? How come there's never a speech from Obama about the 30 million illegal aliens in America? And how he's going to pay for that after he bankrupts us with health care. How's he going to bankrupt us with that, too? I've never seen anything like this. neo-Marxist president? No, not me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are the headlines today on the Savage Nation. Comedian-in-chief, Chairman Obama gave a press conference today. He did not say a single word about North Korea. Why? Because the laughing schmucks in the media didn't ask him a question about North Korea. Why? Because the laughing schmucks in the press corps were told not to ask a question about North Korea. Nothing about Iran, really. What he did was laugh it up with the White House schmendricks. Do you think it's appropriate for the president to be cracking jokes during an international crisis? Kennedy, of course, made the occasional joke, but he didn't do it in the middle of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is the situation we have with North Korea. This is Obama's Cuban Missile Crisis. Let's hope that it doesn't become his Bay of Pigs. There was even one point at which a reporter said, "I would never make fun of your ears, sir." Are those the words of a citizen or a servile subject? Play the clip.
As a public man, non-negotiable. And while I appreciate your Spock-like language about the logic of a healthcare plan, the public plan, it does seem logical to a lot of people that if the government is offering a cheaper healthcare plan, then lots of employers will want to have their employees covered by that cheaper plan.
First of all, was the reference to Spock, is that a crack on my ears? All right. I just want to make sure. No?
Never make fun of your ears, sir.
Covering for Obama. Wolf Blitzer covered for Obama on CNN today. When Republican strategist Alex Castellanos criticized Obama's policy on Iran, Blitzer cut him right off and insisted that Obama had condemned the violence in Iran during the campaign.
Exercising those responsibilities and in such a weak way, look what the Iranians have done anyway. Killing rioters in the streets, suppressing democracy there. And instead of standing up from day one clearly for freedom, he's not. Freedom wilts in those situations.
He did before the election when he saw the protests nightly. He did stand up.
He did
up
condemn
for freedom.
The violence. He said he was appalled and he used some pretty strong words. But let me move on to a different subject.
Then Blitzer, the department store dummy without male parts, move quickly on to another story. How low will you go, Wolfie boy? We also talked about hobbies. Why? Men used to have hobbies in our society. Now hobbies seem to have been obliterated by the internet, and men just surf the net for porn or read the news or go on YouTube or whatever. That's a hobby? The internet is now a hobby? What is your hobby and how does it help you get through your day-to-day life? Tell some of the people out there about your hobbies. There used to be a time in America where men would go into their garages in the summer and work with their hands. Some would work with wood. Some would put together models. Franklin Roosevelt even collected stamps. Summer was a slower time of year when the pace of work was relaxed and people used to spend more time doing leisure activities. It was a time for the mind to recover from the relentless work of the rest of the year, a time to take a break from the heat. Even Congress would take off most of the summer because in an era before air conditioning, it was almost impossible to work in Washington, D.C. in the summer. But now it seems the last scraps of time that used to be dedicated to summer hobbies have been devoured by the internet. Air conditioning lets people stay inside more often, and there's less incentive to do hobbies in the open air. Instead, people stay in dark rooms in their bathrobes and stare at a glowing screen during their free time. They download porn or read the news or surf the web or go on YouTube. Unlike hobbies of the past, going on the internet doesn't rejuvenate the mind. It drains the mind. Pornography builds up expectations that can never be lived up to. the news is either boring or depressing, and in either case, it's exhausting. I used to build models of naval ships. I still do from time to time. But I think there's a generation of American children growing up who have no idea what a real hobby is. An entire generation that knows how to blog, that knows how to download an MP3, that knows how to surf the web, but doesn't know how to collect bugs. God forbid they should start. Their mothers would probably run away screaming and put them in therapy. Oh, my son, my daughter, he's obsessed with bugs. Yeah. But by working with their hands and their minds, boys and men especially can retune their minds. Even the hippie generation used to acknowledge this in certain books. But now that we have a generation of bloggers, it seems that there's no chance to recover from life's stresses and day-to-day struggles. What did you do? What did you used to do as a hobby? Do you still do it anymore? How do you escape from your everyday routine? All right, so you want to talk about politics, all Obama, all the time. I get it. I can hear you now. Come on, Mike, quit talking about hobbies. Why do you think I'm lighting loafers or something? Fine, we'll talk about Obama. Play the clip where he's yucking it up with the press corps.
Before I ask my question, I'm wondering if you could actually answer David's. Is the public plan non-negotiable?
Well, that's your question.
Yeah,
well, you think you're going to... What, are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question?
Well, then I have a two-part question.
Let's hear the part where he's laughing about Iran while people are dying.
Some Republicans on Capitol Hill, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, for example, have said that up to this point, your response on Iran has been timid and weak. Today, it sounded a lot stronger. It sounded like the kind of speech John McCain has been urging you to give, saying that those who stand up for justice are always on the right side of history, referring to an iron fist in Iran, deplore, appalled, outraged. Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
Can you believe that this guy is laughing about this? He didn't say a single word about North Korea, but Nero Obama does stand up while Rome burns. Maybe he can get a late night show on David Letterman after he leaves the White House.
And now, direct from Washington, D.C., the land of mindless quizlings, it's the Barry Obama Show.
First of all, was the reference to Spock, is that a crack on my ears? All right, I just want to make sure. Well, you think you're going to... What, are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? What's your question? Is that your question? What do you think? Look, the... I think John McCain has genuine passion about many of these international issues. I think that all of us share a belief that we want justice to prevail. But only I'm the President of the United States.
Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
This is really getting me so angry. I don't want to talk about this anymore. No more calls on this. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, a 15-year one-man show. It's been running 15 years, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And as you know, I have many elements in this program, and it can change on a dime as it's going to change right now. Last night, I did some soul searching. I said, why has God chosen to put me in this position that an entire nation would attack me so unfairly? I didn't have an answer. And so I looked, went back to the Holy Scriptures, my well-marked blue Bible, the Old Testament. And I read Leviticus. I said, you know, it's a funny thing I do with the Bible. I mean, I'm no biblical expert. I flip through it. And sometimes when I get in trouble, I flip to a page and see, does that work? Well, it worked last night. Let me tell you what this was. Now, many of us, we're only three generations away from a super religious personality. I don't care how atheistic you may be or how wildly disconnected you may be from the church, you're only 2 to 3 generations away from an extremely religious person who built your family. You didn't build your family. You inherited your family. The person who built it was made of much stronger stuff, I can guarantee you. And they went through much harder times than any of us are going through. And so they needed the Bible to get through hard times. They needed to believe in God and believe in you know, the right way and the wrong way, good and evil. And I flipped to Leviticus 26, and I'm going to summarize it. I can't read you every word because I said, oh, my God, it really scared me. And it was about this. It said, you shall make no idols, neither shall you rear you up a graven image or a pillar, neither shall you place any figured stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So it was about the Sabbath and bowing down to graven images. And then God says, if you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments, I will give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield up produce in the trees. You shall eat your bread. I will give you peace. You shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will cause evil beasts to seize out of the land, and so forth and so on. And you're going to lead a great life. And he says to them, that's if you do the right thing. But in 14, it gets really bad. See, the Old Testament was fire and brimstone. It was, this is it, or is only one way. It was God's way or the highway. Let's put it to you that way. So he really wanted you to keep the Sabbath, and he didn't want you to bow down to false idols. I'll let you figure out what a false idol is. I'll let you figure out what a graven image is. I'll let you figure out what the graven images of today are. But he says, if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall reject my statutes, and if your soul abhor mine ordinances so that you will not do all my commandments, but break my covenant, this is what's coming. I also will do this unto you. I will appoint terror over you. Notice the word terror, terrorists. I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever, that shall make the eyes to fail and the soul to languish, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. They that hate you shall rule over you, and you shall flee when none pursueth you, meaning you're going to be frightened of everything. And if you will not yet for these things hearken unto me, it gets worse then. He says, if you still don't do what I want you to do, then I will chastise you 7 times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron, and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her produce, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. And then he gets even more demanding. And he says, and if you walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring 7 times more plagues upon you according to your sins. And I will send the beast of the field among you, which shall rob you of your children and destroy your cattle and make you few in number. Now he goes on, and I'm going to finish up here. God says, but in spite of these things, and if in spite of these things you still are not corrected unto me, but will walk contrary to me, then will I also walk contrary unto you. And I will smite you, even I 7 times for your sins. And I'll bring a sword upon you that shall execute the vengeance of the covenant. And you shall be gathered together within your cities. And I will send the pestilence among you. And you shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven. And they shall deliver your bread again by weight. And you shall eat and not be satisfied. I don't know exactly what that means about the 10 women. A biblical scholar, they probably have argued over this for thousands of years. But the last word is, you shall eat and not be satisfied. Sounds much like Western civilization, doesn't it? Rich tables, laden with rich foods, people eating and not satisfied. That is why they go to one fancy restaurant after another for the next execution of a new meal. Something new. They sprinkle a little from here and there, put it on a meal, and they still don't like it. Why? I'll let you figure it out. And then he goes on, and it gets even worse, and I'm not going to read the rest of it because it gets worse and worse and worse. He just doesn't let you go. I mean, it doesn't get better. And you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemy shall eat you up. That's pretty frightening stuff. I mean, is it just allegory? Who knows? The random musings of olive growers who were deficient in vitamin B3. It's hard to say. I don't know about you, but I tuned in the press conference today. It seems he has one every day with another initiative or this and that. And I turned it off when I saw the schmucks laughing at everything he said. I was embarrassed. I squirmed to watch the vermin from the major news outlets laughing as though it's a joke. I mean, we got North Korea. They didn't ask one question about North Korea. This is Obama's Cuban Missile Crisis moment. And none of the stooges from ABC, CBS, NBC, or CNN asked a question. What's interesting to me is that I saw Obama look down at a set of notes to see which reporter he was supposed to call on next. And then, like little sheeple, they had prepared questions that were typed out for them. I said, no, we don't have to wait too long for the ex-Soviet Union to reemerge. It's already reemerged. The only thing waiting are the re-education camps and the work camps. Otherwise, we're about 80% there. I don't know about you, but I was embarrassed watching the comedian-in-chief today. Do you think it's appropriate for the president of the United States to be making up jokes during an international crisis? Sure, John F. Kennedy made the occasional witty statement, but he certainly didn't do it in the middle of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the situation we have with North Korea now is Obama's Cuban Missile Crisis. Let's just hope it doesn't become his Bay of Pigs. There was even a point at which a reporter said, I would never make fun of your ears, sir. Are those the words of a citizen or a servile subject in a totalitarian dictatorship? I see it getting worse by the day. One of the shills, one of the professional laughers, asked the question that could give him a laugh line. That's why we put together the comedian-in-chief piece for you.
You've got mail.
Oh, I got mail again. What I wanted to talk about today, in addition to that, were hobbies. I know you say, what? I used to be a model maker as a kid. I admittedly don't have any hobbies right now, but I'm going to get them again. You know, men used to have hobbies in our culture. Now hobbies seem to have been obliterated by the internet, and men just download porn, or they go on YouTube, or My Face, Your Face, His Face, All Aboard, or they read the news. And I'm wondering what has happened to the American people, the whole Western world, as a result of the internet. I believe that the computer and the internet have sucked people's creativity out of their beings. You take a look at the art, you take a look at the literature, you listen to the music, and I am telling you that it's all debased rapidly, all because of the computer. The computer has not enhanced our lives in the way that you may think. Sure, it's given us more information. Has it given us more knowledge? Or has the computer given us more information and less knowledge? Is that why such a shallow man as Obama, who was as deceitful as a president that could ever be, could get away with the kind of things he gets away with?
Savage.
And here is what is on MichaelSavage.com. I mean, the lead story is that Obama said nothing about North Korea, the North Korean missile crisis, because the schmucks in the media didn't ask him anything about it. He looked down at a sheet of paper and asked for reporters by name, and they answered with prepared speeches. I saw them looking at their notes. My headline is, U.S. strike at North Korean ship would send Iran a strong signal. It's from Debka. But you won't see that in your local newspaper. Instead, you'll see how wonderful Obama performed in front of the schmucks. If you want to read continuing coverage of Britain's ban on Michael Savage, you can do so on the right side of MichaelSavage.com. Again, I want to thank all of you, each and every one of you, who have donated to the Savage Legal Fund. I will be sending you an update very shortly. Please, please be patient. Next story from the SF Chronicle, San Fran's very, very bad district attorney's office let an illegal alien go. In fact, they were all criminals. She sent them to job training and let them out in the streets. Her name is SF District Attorney Kamala Harris, and now she's going to run for governor. After destroying crime and punishment in San Francisco, she would like to take it to the state capitol. From the London Guardian, Goldman Sachs to make record bonus payout. Isn't that nice? From CNS News, Sotomayor overturned prison regulations to allow Santeria beads. Isn't that nice? Santeria beads for the faithful to wear during prison ceremonies in their cells. Here's some good news. President Nicolas Sarkozy of France says that the Muslim burqa is a sign of the debasement of women and they're not welcome in France. I said the same thing, and the vermin in the George Soros-funded Media Matters attacked me. Let's see if the cowards in Media Matters will attack the president of France. And by the way, I am calling upon all people in the media who have been harassed by this Stalinist group, Media Matters, to join forces and publish the names of the people in Media Matters and put their pictures up on their websites. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. In the next few weeks, you can expect me on michaelsavage.com to give you full pictures and other pertinent information about the individuals who are conducting a campaign against Michael Savage and other conservatives in the media. Let's see how they like it. A lot of people are wondering about who Mir Hussein Mousavi really is. And there doesn't seem to be very much information out there. This is the fellow who ran against the Hitler in Iran. Joining us now is Kenneth Timmerman to give us a little background on who this man actually is.
Michael, I understand that a lot of people are wondering about Mir Hussein Mousavi, the impromptu leader of the protest movement inside Iran. And some people, including President Obama, have said, well, he wouldn't really be that much different from Ahmadinejad. Let me tell you a couple of things that I do know about him, and then let me tell you what's happened in the past couple of weeks, which has changed everything that we know about him. Number one, it is absolutely true. Mir Hussein Mousavi, who was the candidate who claims that he won the presidential election in Iran, and it now appears that he did indeed win that election by a wide majority, according to leaked figures from the Interior Ministry, he has been a member of this regime from the very get-go. He was one of the people who was close to Khomeini during the revolution in 1979. He supported the taking of U.S. hostages, as did Ahmadinejad in 1979. He became the prime minister in 1981 and served in that position until it was abolished in 1989 as prime minister. He not only continued to work as a promoter of Iranian-sponsored terrorism, he also was involved in the nuclear weapons program. In terrorism, we know, for example, that he, as prime minister, helped to set aside funds to set us to establish the Lebanese Hezbollah movement as an armed outreach of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the early 1980s to be on the frontier, on the border with Israel, and to fight Israel as an arm of the Islamic Republic. We know in 1987 that he was personally involved in the purchase of nuclear equipment from AQ Khan, the notorious AQ Khan of Pakistan. This was a part of their clandestine nuclear weapons program when it was first established. We know this because the Iranian government supplied a letter that he had signed as prime minister in 1987 about this in their report to the International Atomic Energy Agency in November of 2007, so just recently, that particular report. Much more recently, we know that his wife, who became an issue with this presidential campaign, Zahra, she is seen photographed trampling on the American flag. Those pictures are at one of my websites, iran.org. That's the site for the Foundation for Democracy in Iran, and we've been serving as a clearinghouse for information coming from sources inside Iran and other intelligence sources and just pro-democracy forces that we've had. You know, I've been involved in debriefing defectors, so I've got an awful lot of people who talk to me and provide me documents from inside the regime, and we've been trying to post them there.
Do you think what we do know about this guy is still relevant?
He has been radicalized in many ways by the confrontation with Ahmadinejad, and it now appears pretty clear that a coup d'etat has been orchestrated by Ahmadinejad and his supporters, and Mousavi has learned about this, and he's well aware of it. The coup was organized by Ahmadinejad along with Mojtaba Khamenei, the son of the supreme leader, and by Morteza Rezai, who is up until just very recently the head of intelligence for the Revolutionary Guards. So Mousavi has become an unlikely and, I believe, reluctant leader of the Iranian protest movement, the pro-democracy movement, and yet, you know, it's kind of like, it reminds me of what Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said about going to war against al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. He says, you go to war with the army you've got, not the army you would like to have. And when you're making a revolution, you go to that war with the revolutionaries you've got and not the ones you'd like to have.
Well, thanks for the information, Ken. I'll be right back.
Savage.
to make news about Ben Bernanke.
Were you influenced at all by John McCain and Lindsey Graham accusing you of being timid and weak?
What do you think?
Is the public plan non-negotiable?
Well, that's your question. Yeah, well, you think you're going to... What, are you the ombudsman for the White House press corps? Is that your question?
All right, so as I said, they now have stooges who call themselves reporters who are fundamentally, basically professional laughers. And as I said to you, Chinese funerals usually have professional mourners who are paid to pretend they're crying at funerals. I've actually seen them outside the Green Street Mortuary in San Francisco. Really, they wail? Oh, I think the Jewish tradition still has that, believe it, in the Orthodox community. And that is because many people have no friends, or they were horrible human beings, and the family needs someone, you know, has some idea. So they hire professional criers. Obama has now apparently co-opted the entire press corps into becoming professional laughers and bootlickers. It's shocking that in 55 minutes he didn't mention war, soldiers, U.S. Marines, Navy, Air Force, troops, boots on the ground, Afghanistan, Iraq, or the word war. 55 minutes. It's amazing to me that during the so-called press conference, I didn't hear a word about North Korea. And I believe that this is his Cuban Missile Crisis. And I believe that the reason he is able to get away with his inactivity lack of effectiveness as a commander-in-chief, let's put it to you that way, is because of the professional laughers. I don't understand how you people can even watch them anymore. Now, it is true that the audience lows for ABC, CBS, and the evening, ABC and CBS Evening News at all-time lows since they started keeping records. Nobody is watching these shills anymore. Katie Couric, toilet. Brian Williams, latrine. No one's watching them anymore, except people in hospitals, prisons, and on cruise ships where they can't get anything else. I've talked in the past about the misconception of Pope Pius XII was Hitler's pope. I have supported the Catholic Church over and over again. Of course, they haven't supported me. They've only attacked me. But since I live for the truth, I really don't care. Because evidence is now coming out that says nothing could be farther from the truth other than what you're going to hear. One of the groups researching and finding the truth about the Pope is the Pave the Way Foundation, and joining us now is Gary Krupp, the founder. Gary, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I really appreciate you giving me a chance to be on the radio today.
Pius XII has been portrayed as a villain, but you have found new documents that prove otherwise, correct?
Yes, that's actually quite true. But the bad light actually started in 1963, up until 1963. Pope Pius XII was revered by everyone, quite literally everyone. Praise was showered upon him by certainly the Jewish people in Italy and throughout Israel and Europe, and almost all of the political leaders of the time. And then 5 years after he died, we found this has all been confirmed. There was a KGB plot to discredit their archenemy, the Roman Catholic Church. And they financed and forged documents and did all kinds of other dirty tricks to create a play called The Deputy. And it was a fictitious play. It was written by a German communist by the name of Rolf Holkhoff. And then it was rewritten by a fellow by the name of Erwin Piscotty. And this information came to us recently. The highest-ranking KGB agent ever to defect, a lieutenant general from Romania, admitted that this plan was in place. It was called Seat 12 and was executed perfectly, and the result was the worst character assassination of the 20th century, where a very good man who really did an enormous amount, not just to mitigate the suffering of so many people, but also worked behind the scenes towards the overthrow of the Nazi regime and so on. And this is incredible information because my wife and I grew up hating him, and we're Jewish, and we grew up hating him. And it was a revelation that came to us. We were asked by, it started a whole sequence of events. We have a foundation which works between all the religions. The Pave the Way Foundation is tasked with removing obstacles between religions. We do not deal in theology or interreligious dialogue. We deal with actual problems between the faiths. We also initiate huge historic gestures between religions. And so once we discovered that there was such a major gap between what's known and what the facts are, we put 2 years of investigation into this before we decided to take this on as a project, and it is quite huge. We had a symposium in Rome last September, a three-day symposium with mostly Jewish audience from around the world. 80 people participate with this, and every one of them came in saying, look, I don't like Pius XII, but I've got an open mind. And what we showed were the documents we discovered and all of the other testimony, and 100% of the people changed their mind. So what we've been trying to do is actually, with many of the press releases, is point everybody towards our website, because anyone can download all of these original documents, some of which are Vatican documents that are open. The Vatican archives are open, were opened 2.5 years ago, up to 1939. And this is 65% of Pacelli's life as a nuncio and as the Secretary of State. There are a number of documents which we've just discovered, which you're referring to, which are actually during the war years, because apparently these documents are available in many of the different dioceses, and all somebody would have to do is go down there and investigate, which is what we did, and we discovered these huge amounts of documents of individual actions of the Vatican to save individual Jews, to send money for their support, all kinds of different things.
You have documented proof that the Pope did not collaborate with Hitler.
We just got back from Germany. We brought back a document, which was from General Karl Wolff, who was the commandant to Italy, Heinrich Himmler's deputy. And his deposition, which was taken in 1948, indicates that he was ordered by Hitler to arrest the Pope, to kidnap him, and take him to Liechtenstein. And this is the plan. This is the actual deposition that he took, admitting this. And this was something that there was no documentation to prove. We now have that documentation. Then there's also, we brought back an internal Gestapo report on the attempt against Hitler's life in July of 1944. And in this report, it names Pacelli, or the Pope, as a co-conspirator through a Jesuit priest, Father Lieber, I think his name is, and he was actually, and the Pope was aware of this attempt against Hitler's life, and they, you know, there were plans in place. He was not at all helpful. In fact, throughout, if you go to our website and you see the documentation from 1917, the 1920s, where there's one letter which I have from an American, the Council General from it was an American Council General from Milan to the Foreign Service in Washington the day after Pacelli was elected, and he's reporting to Washington what the new Pope is going to be like. And in this letter, you can see the original on the website, it very clearly says that although Pacelli's opposition to Hitler and National Socialism was well known to him, he had no idea to what extreme, and proceeded to say that Pacelli said that he supported the Catholic bishops in Germany to oppose National Socialism, even at the cost of losing young Catholics. There is not one shred of evidence that we have come up with, or that anybody else can come up with, to prove that, in fact, he was a collaborator of Hitler, or that he was anti-Semitic. The exact opposite.
Really? What did you find?
We have a letter, for example, from 1937, when he was Secretary of State, where the government of Poland was going to intervene, and they were going to create a law making kosher slaughtering illegal. And we have a signed letter by Cardinal Pacelli saying that he would find that this law would cause grave persecution to the Israelites and have grave consequences to the Jewish people, and they opposed the law, and they changed it. We have his intercession to get the palms during Sukkot, which was stuck in 1925 and stuck in Italy to try to help the chief rabbi of Germany. His closest friend growing up was an Orthodox Jewish boy named Guido Mendez, who Pacelli personally intervened to save him and send him to Israel, or to Palestine at the time, in 1939, where he used to have Shabbat dinner with him every Saturday. He learned how to speak Hebrew. He used to read the books of many of the great Hebrew writers. So every single piece of evidence we found completely destroys this entire notion. And according to Joseph Lichten, who is the head of the Anti-Defamation League, and Pincus Lapide, who is an Israeli historian and ambassador, Pacelli saved more Jews than all the world leaders and religious leaders combined. And it was Lapide that said in his book, he died, I think, in the 1960s, but he said in his book that Pope Pius XII is responsible for saving up over 860,000 Jewish lives. I have a telegram on the website, the original telegram from Pacelli to the Regent of Hungary, asking him to not to deport the Jews, and he listened. He didn't save the lives of 200,000 Jews. Where he intervened in Slovakia, where he intervened in every country he possibly could, where he smuggled Jews out of Europe through Portugal into the Dominican Republic, and then from there into the United States, to Bolivia, to Brazil. We have original letters. So the evidence we found, and trust me, I'm looking for the bad stuff too. I can't find anything.
What is your website so we can see these documents for ourselves?
www.ptwf.org or pavethewayfoundation.org. And you go to the page that talks the study of the papacy of Pius XII. But we are trying to find more. In fact, we just went to one diocese. Actually, it was a friend of ours who had gone to this one diocese. We found 2,330 pages of documents referring to help that Pius did for Jews in that one diocese. And that's even a small one. And you're going to see a ton of stuff which is available today. And this is what they keep saying. Why are the Vatican archives open for the war years? They're not open because they're not cataloged yet. They just opened up to 1939, just 2 years ago. So until the cataloging is complete, they can't open it. The Pope has ordered an acceleration of the catalog. The Pope has also said that he wants it open as soon as possible. But it can't be opened because you have cartons. There's an estimate of up to 30 million documents that have to be bound in books, stamped, numbered, and identified and inventoried before you can open it, to understand how the system works over there. But they did open up to 1939, and guess what? Nobody has gone to the archives to 1939. None of the critics or the institutions have gone. We know this because we have the sign-in sheets.
This is unbelievable to me.
And it's very upsetting. So people have allowed this terrible misconception to exist and have not said anything about it. And I said that, as far as I'm concerned, that's just wrong.
Gary Krupp, thanks for being on the Savage Nation, and thanks for the great work your foundation is doing to spread the truth. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.